Hello, this is Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper with the article, Alderman Pass Funds for Project. Flex and Gates to Add 135 Jobs by 2021, by Jennifer Bailey. With the of 135 jobs to its 134 full-time employees by 2021. Flex and Gates expansion will move it from number 8 to number 5 on the list of largest local manufacturing employers. The City Council's Public Works Committee Tuesday night recommended approving $80,000 in Community Development Block Grant funds to assist with machinery for the company expansion for four new products from Ford and Toyota. The full City Council will act on the funding assistance next week. Flex and Gate, at 3403 Lynch Creek Drive, will be constructing a 55,000 square foot addition to its existing 52,000 square foot facility. Total investment is estimated at more than $18 million. We see this as a minor investment, Vermilion Advantage President and CEO Vicky Hogan said, of the CDBG portion. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity already approved a $1.198 million in economic development for a Growing Economy Tax Credit Program, or EDGE, tax credits for Flex and Gate Plastics Corporation's Danville project. Construction is expected to be completed by fall of 2019. In other business, the Public Works Committee also heard about a second amendment to the billing and collection services contract between the city and Danville Sanitary District. The proposed three-year contract to start January 1, 2019, would include 2% annual increases to the city. The costs would increase from $16,667 a month paid by the city to the sanitary district to $17,000 the first year, $17,340 the second year, and $17,686 the third year. The billing and collection services for sewer and garbage fees with the Danville Sanitary District started in 2008. Aqua Illinois took over the city's sewer and garbage billing in January 2006. The agreement allowed for Aqua to disconnect water service because of customers' delinquent garbage and sewer bills. Problems started mid-2007 when the water company switched to the new billing software and bill payments weren't received locally anymore. The sanitary district has billed about $5 million a year for the city in sewer and garbage fees. Sanitary District Director Doug Ahrens said there are some significant changes with Aqua Illinois, such as disconnect and reconnect fees going up. The item wasn't on the committee agenda for action, but Alderman said it still will be sent to the full City Council for action next week. Another item that wasn't on the agenda and had opposition was an alley vacation requested by Troy and Linda Schultz, between property they own at 918 and 926 Walnut Street. Culligan Water and a neighbor opposed the alley vacation due to both using it for vehicles. The committee also briefly talked about the city's tax levy and new fiscal year budget. Aldermen are divided whether a city manager should be included now in the budget or wait until after the November 6th election. Ward 5 Alderman Mike Purr also asked for numbers on putting all pension costs on the property tax levy instead of having a public safety pension fee. The city's property tax rate would increase from $2.24 to $3.59 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation. Committee members also voted to table until its November 13th meeting a contract for Phase 1 engineering for a downtown lighting and sound system, due to aldermen questioning the almost $62,000 cost. We'll go now to the brief article, Eisenhower Vote. Rantoul's Village Board of Trustees unanimously approved an agreement with a 5-0 vote on Tuesday night for Danville Mayor Scott Eisenhower to be the village's next administrator. Details of the contract. Salary is $100,000 through May 2020, and to be adjusted annually thereafter. There is no set term. There is a residency requirement within 6 months, 12 months if building a home. Educational incentives. If a bachelor's degree is attained, it will result in a $10,000 increase in salary. And if a master's degree in public administration, business administration, or planning is attained, this will result in a $20,000 salary increase. And Eisenhower is expected to work to attain International City/County Management Association credentialed manager status. Eisenhower's last day as Danville mayor will be November 4th, the day prior to starting in Rantoul. We'll now go once again to the front page, to the article, Staying Safe. Liberty Elementary Students Enjoy Visit from City Firefighters, by Carol Rome, Danville. Kindergartners and first graders at Liberty Elementary School learned about firefighting and toured the inside of a fire engine on Tuesday morning. Danville firefighter Sean Lange told the children what to do in case of a fire and how to stay safe by remembering to stop, drop, and roll, advising them to crawl on the floor where it's cooler and the smoke would be above them. "You guys are the most important thing and that you're safe," he said. "Don't go back in for your favorite toy." The youngsters learned some firefighting facts as well, such as the tank on a fire engine holds 750 gallons of water, and that firefighters can have their gear on and be out the door within a minute, Lange said. "We put on everything. It's a little over 50 pounds, Lieutenant Jason Bilstead said, of all the gear firefighters wear. Danville's fire stations are situated so that firefighters can reach anywhere in town within 7 minutes or less, Lange said. "We go as quickly as we can and still be safe," he said about driving the fire truck. Bilstead said the Danville Fire Department battles about 80 structure fires a year, which is above average for a city of Danville's size. "Even when there isn't a fire," he said, "we go out every day. We go on several thousand calls a year. Those calls include auto accidents, medical runs, and hazardous materials situations. We also train on a lot of things," Bilstead said. "We train on a lot more than firefighting." After sizing up the fire engine, first grader Jalen Jackson was curious about something. "Have you tried to go through a drive-thru with the fire truck?" the youngster asked. Lange chuckled and said the enormous fire engine wouldn't fit through a drive-thru. When asked what his favorite part of the morning was, first grader Kyan Johnson said, "I liked going into the fire truck." First grade teacher Ainge Carlton said the Liberty youngsters enjoy the annual visit from Danville firefighters. "Their presentation is amazing, and they're great with the kids," she said. We'll go now to the article, Sweet Adelines Show Range of Emotions in Their Fall Show, by Mary Wyckoff, Danville. Expect a roller coaster of emotions at the Danville Sweet Adelines Show on Saturday. The Good, the Bad, and the Emoji will be presented at 4 and 7 p.m. in the Bremer Center at Danville Area Community College. "We think it will be very entertaining," show chairman Celia Kratz said. "I'm very excited about our script and choreography this year." The songs will cover a range of emotions, such as happy, angry, orange-colored sky, over the rainbow, love potion number 9, why haven't I heard from you, and Irving Berlin's always. "The 18 women have incredible talent," Kratz said, exhibiting skills such as choreography, scriptwriting, and graphic arts, as well as singing. The first half of the show will feature the Sweet Adelines and the emoji theme. The second half will feature their guests, Sentimental Journey, a quartet from Charleston, and two Danville Barbershop Chorus quartets, Four on the Floor and Buffalo Quartet, and then more from the Sweet Adelines. The choreography is new and unusual this year, with the singers using round pillows with the emoji faces. Maureen Henkel, president of Sweet Adelines, has written the script again this year. She was going to decline for this show, But when the emoji theme was chosen, some ideas just popped into her head. "There's no stopping me now," she said. The script includes the lines that people say between songs or to introduce a song. "It should be fun. It's not a complicated story," Hinkle said. She also invites women to join the group, or at least check it out. Potential members should be able to carry a tune, but don't have to know how to read music. "Most of us are singers, not vocalists," she said. "And," she added, "we'll teach you the barbershop style." Founded in 1945, Sweet Adelines International is one of the world's largest and most respected music associations for women. With nearly 22,000 members worldwide, the continued success of Sweet Adelines can be traced to its diversified rosters and expanded repertoire that changes with the times. We'll go now to the death notices. Carol Fay Myers, 85, of Westville, passed away on Sunday, October 7th. A celebration of Carol's life will be at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, October 10th, at Sunset Urbas Funeral Home in Westville. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. on Wednesday prior to her service at the funeral home. She will be later laid to rest in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorial donations may be given in her name to donors' choice of charity. Gregory Dean Thornsborough, a longtime resident of Westville, Illinois, passed away on October 4th. A celebration of Greg's life will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, October 12th, at Sunset Urbas Funeral Home in Westville. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. on Friday prior to his service at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest in Sunset Memorial Park with an additional prayer service given by Reverend Thornsborough and Reverend Michael Kontos of Three Hierarchs Greek Orthodox Church of Champaign officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made in Greg's name for his brother's continuing care, or to the American Diabetes Association or the American Heart Association. Terry D. Carpenter, 64, of Danville, passed away on October 4th. A celebration of Terry's life will be at 10 a.m. on Friday, October 12th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. A visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, October 11th, at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made in his honor to the Midwest Veterans Association. Donald Tedder will have a homegoing celebration that will commence at noon on Friday, October 12th, at St. Synagogue COGIC at 2605 East Main Street in Danville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until the time of the services. Evelyn Babe Jane Rice, 97, of Urbana, formerly of Potomac, passed away on Sunday, October 7th. A celebration of Evelyn Babe Jane Rice's life will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, October 12th, at Middle Fork United Methodist Church in Potomac. She will be laid to rest following the services in Potomac Cemetery. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Friday at the church. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Middle Fork United Methodist Church or Potomac Public Library. Monty J. Tarr, 70, of Catlin, Illinois, passed away on October 8th. Family services at First Presbyterian Church of Danville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Doctors Without Borders or First Presbyterian Church of Danville. Ethel Et May Bossoloni, 96, of Westville, passed away on Sunday, October 7th. A celebration of Et's life will be at 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 11th, at Sunset Urbas Funeral Chapel in Westville. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, prior to her service at the funeral home. Nancy J. Cusick, 84, of Danville, passed away on October 6th. A celebration of Nancy's life will be at 3 p.m. Wednesday, October 10th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. A visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. at the funeral home prior to the service. Private entombment at Sunset Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, the family has requested memorials be sent to Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 1930 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Donna Clay, 64, of Homer, passed away on Sunday, October 6th. A celebration of life will be from 3 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, October 10th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Memorial donations may be made to the American Childhood Cancer Organization. Deborah Macy, 63, of Danville, passed away on October 4th. A celebration of Deb's life will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, October 11th, at Sunset's Houghton Leisure Chapel at 200 East West Street in Georgeville, Georgetown. Burial will follow at Georgetown Cemetery. A visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, October 10th at the funeral home. Memorials may be made in Deb's name to Danville Christian Academy. Jack Dean Grubb, 85, of Covington, Indiana, passed away on Tuesday, October 9th. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, October 11th, at Diverter Funeral Home in Cayuga, Indiana. Burial will be at Lower Mound Cemetery, north of Perrysville, Indiana. Visitation at noon Eastern on Thursday, October 11th, until time of services at the funeral home. Contributions may be made to Perrysville United Methodist Church or to the Fountain County Animal Shelter. Terry Bolden, 63, of Danville, formerly of Las Vegas, passed away on Friday, September 28th. Memorial services will be at noon on Saturday at Leake & Sons Funeral Home in Danville. Visitation from 11 a.m. to noon on Saturday at the funeral home. Danville Tedder, 72, of Danville, passed away on Thursday, October 4th. Funeral services will be at noon on Friday at St. Synagogue's Church of Christ, Church of God in Christ, in Danville. Burial for the Army veteran will be in the Danville National Cemetery in Danville. Visitation from 11 a.m. to noon on Friday at the church. For some additional Danville news, we'll go to today's News Gazette for the article, Woman Gets 60 Years for Shooting. Parking accident ended with man's death outside Danville grocery store. By Noelle McGee, Danville. Nearly 1.5 years after she gunned down a man in a grocery store parking lot following a minor accident with two of her children, Lakeisha M. Cunningham stood in a courtroom and apologized for her actions. "I'm deeply sorry for what happened," the Danville woman said Tuesday afternoon, as she stood before Vermilion County Circuit Judge Nancy Fahey in an orange jumpsuit and handcuffs. Her Chicago lawyer, Justin Schwartz, beside her. "This is not me," she continued, referring to her violent actions that resulted in the April 27, 2017 death of 25-year-old Justin E. Jones of Danville. Earlier, she claimed that Mr. Jones and his friends had harassed her and her children on multiple occasions for 2 years when her family lived at the Fair Oaks Public Housing Complex. She also claimed she went to the police and state's attorney's office, but didn't get any help. "I've never been in a situation like this," she said. "I've never had a felony. I've never been to jail before. I was just protecting my kids." Cunningham's pleas didn't stop Fahey from sentencing her to 60 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. "It was basically cold-blooded murder," the judge said. "You decided to take the law into your own hands." Fahey went on to say the stiff sentence was needed to send a strong message out into a community where gun violence is absolutely out of control. "This community is not going to tolerate this type of violence." State's attorney Jacqueline Lacey said she was satisfied with the sentence, even though she had argued for a 75-year term. Though credited with already having served 511 days behind bars, Cunningham, who turns 40 on Sunday, must serve 100% of her sentence and will likely spend the rest of her life in prison, Lacey said. During her argument, Lacey played video footage of the shooting, which was used to help convict Cunningham of first-degree murder at the end of her four-day trial in March. The video, taken by a Danville Housing Authority surveillance camera, shows a small group of people arguing outside of Netta's grocery store, across from Fair Oaks. The argument stemmed from a fender bender caused when Cunningham's son, Rashawn Wilson, backed a GMC into Mr. Jones's Monte Carlo. During the trial, prosecution and defense witnesses testified that Mr. Jones took the keys to the SUV and refused to return them to Wilson or his sister, Lakeisha Brooker, until they paid him for any damage. In the segment Lacey played on Tuesday, Cunningham gets out of a car that pulls up, approaches the group, and raises a gun, pointing it at Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones falls to the ground, gets up, and stumbles around a lot. Then he's put into a car that pulls up, which Lacey later said takes him to the hospital. She executed him in Netta's parking lot, the prosecutor said, adding that Mr. Jones wasn't armed and Cunningham fled the scene and was later apprehended in the Chicago area. They want to blame the victim. They want to blame the victim's friends, when in reality, it's her fault. Upon learning of the argument, she didn't dial the police. She decided she was going to take the law into her own hands. Prior to the hearing, Schwartz, whom Cunningham hired after she was convicted, asked Fahey to grant a directed verdict or a new trial, arguing that her defense lawyer, public defender Mike Mara, was ineffective. Among other things, Schwartz argued, Cunningham told Mara that Mr. Jones had come to her apartment with a gun on several occasions, had robbed her son and nephew, and had fought various family members. And yet, Mara didn't present any evidence of that. That, he said, would have shown why his client feared Mr. Jones and thought she was acting in self-defense when she shot him. Schwartz put several witnesses on the stand to try to corroborate those claims, and say Mr. Jones was a known gang member and drug dealer and had even murdered someone, but couldn't prove those claims. He also argued that Lacey should have recused herself from the case because Cunningham went to her, asking for a restraining order against Mr. Jones. However, Lacey argued that during the trial, Lucy Overlander, the victim witness, services coordinator, testified that Cunningham never came to the office. Finally, Schwartz argued that the jury should have been allowed to consider the charge of involuntary manslaughter, which carries a much lighter sentence of 3 to 5 years in prison. Lacey said Mara argued that the lesser charge be considered in a pretrial hearing, but was denied. For some news in local sports, we'll head to page B1 for the article, Locked and Loaded, Darby Martinez Claim Individual Races, by Chad Dare. Chrisman. Fielding a full team was once again the key to winning the Vermilion Valley Conference Girls Cross Country title. But this year, it wasn't just enough to have 5 girls. The Oakwood Salt Fork squad had 5 very talented runners, as all of them placed in the top 10, helping the Comets wrestle the conference title away from the Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin Blue Devils in a meet held on the Chrisman Cow Chip course. "We were real excited when we started the year with a full team," said Bis Hen Rossell coach Hannah Rhodes, whose team was looking for its 3rd straight VVC title. "But we found out early in the year that we weren't the only team in the county with a full team. It's gotten competitive, and it's good to see it growing." Oakwood Salt Fork coach Phil Supernot admitted that he knew back in July that the Comets were going to have enough girls to field the full squad. "It was a matter of how hard we were going to work and how bad did we want to win," he said. "They have worked hard these last couple weeks. This is what we have been gearing up for, is the last couple of weeks of the season." Grace Davis led for Oakwood Salt Fork with a 3rd place finish, with teammates Mackenzie Russell taking 4th and Carly Richardson finishing 6th. The other 2 runners for the Comets in the top 10 were Carly Thompson and Amber Kirby. "I think having a full team motivates them to work hard," said Supernot, admitting the team's ultimate goal this year is to qualify for sectionals. While Bismarck Henning, Rossville Alvin didn't repeat as team champions, the Blue Devils did get the individual title for the second year in a row, as junior Lexi Darby repeated as the conference champion. After 2 years of running with teammate Aaron Willard, who graduated a year ago, Darby was looking for some area runners to push her this season. "I've been wanting competition this year, and I've got it," Darby said. Actually, at the halfway point of Tuesday's race, Darby was actually running third, behind Quincy Schnedeker of Chrisman Georgetown Ridge Farm and Gracie Einer of Hoopston area. "I think my dad was a little worried," Darby said. "It was all part of my strategy. I know how the other girls in our conference run. I had that in the back of my mind when I was running." Rhodes also pointed out that Darby has also been working on a specific aspect of her race. "We talked a lot about working hard on mile two," Rhodes said. "That is a weakness for a lot of runners. She has put a lot of work for her endurance." "It was in that second mile where Darby went from third to first. That's what I was hoping for," she said. "I didn't want to go out too hard. I wanted to make sure that I had something left for the end." Darby, whose winning time was 22 minutes 15 seconds, won the race by 8 seconds over Einer. Schnedeker, who fell during last year's conference meet, finished 5th for the Cardinals. In the boys' race, Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin's Gabe Martinez claimed his first ever Vermilion Valley Conference title, with a very strong final mile. Martinez, whose winning time was 16:50, pulled away and beat Armstrong Potomac's Austin Bridgman by 34 seconds on Tuesday. "My plan was just to try and work off the other runners and save it for the last portion of the race. I think it worked pretty well," Martinez said. "It was the exact race that I wanted to run. I just tried to distance myself at the end and use my track speed." The first part of the boys' race was extremely competitive, with Dawson Rogers of Oakwood Salt Fork, Bridgman, and Martinez exchanging the lead, while Andy Hone and Cameron Helka of Oakwood Salt Fork, along with Andy Craig from Schlarman Academy, were right behind them. "The top boys around the county and the conference are so competitive," Rhodes said. "If Gabe let them pull ahead too far, he wouldn't have been able to catch them. He kept them right there, and he had a good kick at the end." Martinez admitted a freshman teammate, Eli Mojonier, really pushed him at the start of the year. "I started off the season really bad, struggling to get into the 18s, Martinez said. "I've always been in a in-season peaker, but we had a freshman come up, and it really hit me hard that I needed to work this year if I wanted to remain on the top of my own team." With a full squad, the Blue Devils took second in the team standings, finishing behind Chrisman Georgetown Ridge Farm, who won its third straight league title. The Cardinals won the title with a balanced attack, as their top five runners all finished in the top 16. Leading the way was Eli Johnson, with an 8th place finish, followed by Kyle Taylor in 9th, and Scott Combs was 10th. That's about all the time we have for today's reading. Once again, this has been Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to the next time we get to read together.